Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the governess to my dark destroyer, it's Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Now, Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, we're back again.
We are.
Series 3, how are you, mate?
I'm very good. And genuinely, they said it wouldn't last. Right, us two talking complete bollards about our favourite subject, and we're now into a third series. And I'm delighted. It's really good. We get paid to do what we like to do.
I know, it's hilarious, isn't it?
It's great.
Hey, and I'll tell you what, Dave, we're on the back of that little live event we did. How great was that?
Well, I think it's maybe... We can't say too much because we have plans for the live show.
Anyway,
I think it went very well, and I think we're in a good place. And blimey O'Reilly, what a start we have for Series 3 today, Jason.
Well, we do, actually. And this guy, I mean, I'm not sure many people are going to know who he is, but he is a national treasure. The host of, well, too many telly shows to even mention, which is why he's rarely off the box. And in addition to that, he's been an actor, a comedian, a singer, and a former professional footballer, no less. Makes you sick, doesn't it?
It really does.
It is the one and only Mr. Bradley Walsh. Hello, mate. How are you?
Thanks, Jason. Cheers, mate. Thanks, Dave. Thank you so much. And listen, just before we go any further, when you do your next event, I'd like to be part of that. Because that's the sort of thing I love. Do you know what I mean? I mean, a lot of people don't know. I mean, they know certain interests I've got in cars and stuff like that and motorsport and everything that goes with it. But I have to say, the event would be right up my runway, so to speak. Right up my strasse,
Should we call it Operation Brad?
Yeah, let's call it that. Let's call it that, absolutely. And I have to say, before we go any further too, which will please your sponsors, the company that insures my classic cars is indeed...
Adrian Flux! He's a very bright man.
Listen, Bradley Walsh, our live tour is already secured.
Yeah.
Great.
But I tell you what we do need. We're going to need some weird celebrity rider.
Yeah.
Something odd to put on. I mean, you won't get it, but it'll be humorous. So what sort of things can we look forward to in your rider? Any white cats or anything like that to go with the car?
No, I'm really easy to please. Some Roquefort cheese, a real nice sort of sweetish red wine. Nothing too extravagant or expensive. A bottle of Blossom Hill Soft and Fruity, you do me.
And super. Then, I'm taking a note. Cheese.
And some biscuits from Tesco's. That's about it. There's nothing too extravagant for me. I want an apple. A pink lady apple.
Oh, pink ladies.
They're called pink ladies, I think. Yeah. I mean, when I get sent to the shops for fruit, my wife Donna always says, "Brad, don't forget the apples." And I go, "Right." And as I'm going to you, pink lady. I go, "Okay, there you go." So that's what I've got to get.
Right, it's on the list.
There you are.
Cheese, wine, more wine,
biscuits,
and pink lady.
Yeah. Yeah,
Pink lady apple.
I must put that down.
Good.
Very good. So listen, Bradley, Jason alluded to, rarely off the box. You're a busy, busy man, aren't you? When I look at the telly, I see The Chase, I see Blankety Blanks come back on a Saturday night, The Larkins have started, Breaking Dad with Barney.
I know.
I mean, you genuinely, and I mean this, you genuinely look like you love what you're doing, and I can only suppose that's the truth.
The thing is, Dave, it's like this. My wife often says to me, "Brad, you know, what are you going to do? Do you know what I mean? Are you going to slow down? What are you going to do?" And I said, you know, I always say the same thing. If you're, there's a slight subtle difference, but a lot of people don't realise about me too. I go to church when I can, obviously because of work, and sometimes you're tied to it, you can't get there.
Yeah.
But my old vicar, a guy called Geoffrey Connor, he's no longer at a vicar at the moment. We've got a young lad called Lee Batson, who's very good. However, when I said to him one day, people keep saying to me, you know, you're a workaholic, Brad, you're a workaholic. And he said, "But you really love what you do, Brad, don't you?" And I said, "I do, Jeff. I love what I do." And he said, "Well, that's the subtle difference." He said, "It's not like you're working for the sake of working." He said, "You actually enjoy it." There's not very many jobs, Dave, and that you know, you go to work and you belly laugh a dozen, 20 times a day with people. You can't go and work. I'm an ex-engineer. When I worked in the factory at Rolls-Royce, I mean, you didn't really, unless my mate Stuart Greaves was hiding from the bosses in the toilets, that's or in the welding bay, that's funny. But other than that, you wouldn't really belly laugh all day. Or when sort of JP's flying around a track, do you know what I mean, at a million miles an hour, you're not having a laugh. You've got to concentrate. Whereas me...
sometimes I do.
You know, yeah. You know what I mean, though? Whereas I actually... I really love what I do. And people also... I was talking about this morning... that people say, oh, you work too much. Now, here's the thing, right? I make 210 chases a year, daytime show, right? 210.
Wow, that's
three a day, that's 70 days work, okay?
Wow. Yeah.
So that's 70 days work. Yeah. Then I make a blankety blank.
Yep.
I make 10 of those, that's made in 5 days. Mm-hmm. I make 16, I make a dozen, beat the chasers. Yep. That's done in 5 days. So it's purely and simply, I'm doing like 90 days of work a year, 100 days of work.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Wait, when you subtract that from 365, actually,
it leaves a lot of time off.
Doesn't it?
My biggest commitment is 15 weeks on the Larkins and working. And I can't say working on the road with Barney is work because I'm with my son and we're having a screen, do you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you are, for, you know, all intent and purposes, you're on a holiday with your son.
Yeah.
Which is something that I would imagine, and I can tell from your relationship, it's very similar, it's a slight tangent. I used to have a fantastic relationship with my dad as well. He's sadly no longer with us, but we used to go on driving holidays. And when I watched that with you and Barney, it reminds me of me when I was probably a similar age. You know, my dad was early 60s, I was late 20s, you know, and we had that kind of relationship and it was really special. And I see that. And so when you're filming that and you're going around in a big RV, you're just getting filmed on holiday, aren't you?
Exactly right. And I, Dave, never did that with my dad. My dad was a manual worker and, you know, so he never had the time. Monday to Friday, he'd come home on a Friday night and be exhausted. Saturday, watch the football on Saturday, go watch the football on a Sunday, or watch me when I played as a kid, and then go back to work on a Monday.
Yeah.
And holiday would have been like a week and a bit at Butlins.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And then you'd be
like, well, I'm at Butlins, and they go, well, go off and play with other kids then. So you never really had that sort of... So for me, but going around the on a tour with Barnes in an RV is just great fun.
I love that show because it brings back childhood memories of me karting with mum and dad in a little van and, you know,
exactly.
up and down the country every weekend. And I loved it. Oh, in fact, we all did. You know, special times. So, yeah, I love that show.
I missed a trick there, JP, and I'll tell you for why. Because... when he was younger, he much, much younger, Barney, he's now 23, he was fearless, right? And he's still fearless now. He does all this sort of surfing and rock climbing and all that old game. He's not really a sportsman, but I just missed out because there was a lad he knew that was a drag racer on bikes.
Oh, is that right?
But I wanted to get Barney, into, and this young boy, Alfie, he goes to Santa Pod. He lived at the back of us. And I wanted to get Barney into karting, then into racing, but never got, I missed it. Because he wanted to be an actor, Barney. So his weekends, he wanted to go to drama school and stuff like that, you know, so I just missed it out,
Well, do you know what? That would have saved you a few quid.
Yeah,
as my dad would say.
Exactly right. Yeah, absolutely.
Great sport, but it's not cheap, is it, Jason? At any level.
Absolutely not. We're all competitive guys, and if you're competitive, then you want to do better, and that costs more money. So no, it isn't cheap.
Yeah, exactly right.
Anything with an engine ain't cheap. So bear in mind how much you love your job and all the different bits and bobs you do. Tell me, you know, the 18 months with this awful thing we've all been locked away from, how hard was that? That must have been tough, eh?
Okay, it was tough, but, and this is where we get on to one of the reasons why I'm probably talking to you now. Around about 2017, I decided I was going to buy, I've got a couple of classic cars. I've got a 1973 automatic Primrose Yellow E-Type Jag, drop head.
Yeah.
Right, it was the sort of auto. They were the ones they were going to send to the United States. They were trying out the automatic transmission and power steering and all that sort of business. And it drives, to me, it drives like a fairly new car.
Right, yeah.
So I thought to myself, this is great, this is great. And so I thought, well, I know what I'll do. I'm going to try and track down a DB5. That's what I'm going to do.
Nice.
I'm going to, that's it. It's the ultimate car. Yeah. It's the man's car.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to be James Bond. Everyone wants to be with James Bond. Everyone wants to sit in a DB5. Everyone wants to own a CB5. Silver Birch, DB, that's it. So we went and found a one. It wasn't a Silver Birch, but it was a DB5. And it drove like a bucket of nails. And I went, oh no, I'm not too keen on that. For all the money it was going to cost,
yeah,
it wasn't, and it needed some bits doing to it. I didn't really enjoy it. And then my friend said, what about the DB4? No, thank you. What about the DB6? No, thank you. I need a DB5. So anyway, I then looked at it. I'd had a look at a DB4 because a friend of mine's got one. And then there was a DB6 come up for sale. So I looked at the DB4, DB5, DB6, and the Evolution. I thought, do you know what? They should have made a DB7. Oh, they did make a DB7. Oh, hang on a minute. Let's have a look at the DB. Okay, right, okay. So there was a missing link.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they never really made a DB8. And then they made the DB9, which looked like it had come out of Space 1999 in comparison to the others.
Yeah.
So there was a missing link. And I thought, do you know what? And this is all to do with the lockdown.
Yeah.
So over Zoom, I got together with my, this is 2017, moving into 2018. Mm-hmm. It was the end of 2018. I said to my mates, do you know what? I think I'm going to build a DB5, but a modern version. A modern version, a muscle version of a DB5. That's what I'm going to do. Because I've always wanted an Aston Martin, and I'm going to build this car. And they went, don't be ridiculous. I said, let's find some brilliant coach builders. Let's find the best coach builders we can find. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's do this. Let's get it. And within a month, we'd had drawings, etc., etc.
Wow.
Come back, that weren't quite right. Someone then made a model.
Yeah.
That weren't quite right. We looked at this, and I'm an ex-Rolls-Royce engineer, helicopter engines for Rolls-Royce up there at Leavesden, which is now the Harry Potter Film Studio,
which
is where they first made GoldenEye. Eon Films used to work up there after it shut down the factory.
So it all intersects, you see, Bradley. It all intersects beautifully. Yeah,
exactly. And so I literally, I sort of made some other sketches, took them in. The scoop at the front on the bonnet needed to come down further. It weren't quite right. The grill didn't sit upright.
Yeah.
The grill sat forward too much. It looked like an old DB3S. That wasn't quite right. Blah, blah, blah. And so I said, do you know what? Never mind that. Let's get a DB9. Take it a bit. So we did that, exactly that. We got some drawings. And now, all through lockdown, on Zoom, in the quiet of, 10 minutes here, half an hour there, 5 minutes here, an hour there, 10 minutes here, on Zoom, with the guys who were locking themselves away on their own, building this, trying to get this done.
Yeah.
And it was a one-man operation at some point because of the way it was. We ended up with what we ended up with. And I'm so proud of it. But and the only problem is, of course, you can't call it an Aston Martin Vantare because Aston Martin haven't built it.
Yeah.
We built it.
Yeah.
But it is underneath. Take that body off and all that interior. We just took it to bits. There weren't a bit left on it. The brakes were off. Everything was off. It was just the chassis and the engine.
Yeah.
The wheels, we had the wheels rebilleted, all the glass remade, everything. Everything that needed to be done. It was because I started out life at Rolls-Royce as a sheet metal worker and coppersmith.
Yeah.
So, and then I went to their technical school. So all I ever wanted to do was skin aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved all the lines.
Yeah, yeah.
That was my thing. So the body shape was my thing. And then I ended up working on the engines anyway, on the low pressure nozzles on the jet engines of the Gnome and coupled domes for helicopters from the Ministry of Defence. And then, so basically, that's what happened. We took it off, we remodeled this entire car, and people listening to us now, if you see the adverts on the telly for Honda or Jaguar or whoever they are, they've got the plasticine cars where they have to scrape them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The clay molds. I've done all that, did all that.
Isn't that a lovely feeling, right? When you've got the scraper.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did all that.
Just to clarify, Bradley, just for those that aren't, we're familiar with the story, but so this project, which started in lockdown.
Yeah, just before lockdown.
Is now a thing. It's now a thing.
It's now a thing.
It's an actual car that is for sale.
Yeah, it's an actual... And so much so, the second one has just gone into production. Someone has just come in and wants to purchase 002. I have 001 at the moment. Later on, I will probably sell 001 because I want 007.
Yes, I knew you were going to say that.
Well, you've got to have it, haven't you? There is no other number.
Yeah, and so I want 007 of the Vantare series. And, so I'm so proud of it.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It is a beautiful-looking thing. It really is.
Oh, you'd like it? Do you like it, JP?
I think it's beautiful. I think it's great.
Thank you.
You know, I'm a big fan of the... In fact, I was lucky enough to drive BMT 126 Alpha. Which was a Aston Martin Heritage, and I had it for the day filming. Oh, and it was just the best thing ever. So to look at what you've done with this, where it's slightly, it's more sporty, it's more sculpted. It's still got the feel of the DB5.
Yeah.
But it's just a bit more modern. I think it's a work of art. It's beautiful.
Oh, that's really kind. Thank you.
It's a stunning looking car, Brad. And you must have to pinch yourself because it's one thing having... It's a bit like a boyhood project, isn't it? It's a bit like
That's exactly it.
You know, we used to make models of cars and planes and whatever before, you know, our grumpy teenagers just wanted the Wi-Fi code. You know, back in the olden days, and we actually used to do stuff, you know, and we'd make things. But what you've done is you've effectively made your dream toy car, but rather than making it out of, like, Lego bricks or whatever, you've actually made it. Yeah. And it's... As I say, it's a stunning, stunning motor.
Yeah, it is, it's very...
Oh, thank you so much. You know what? For all intents and purposes, this... I said it on the TV the other week. This is the car Aston Martin should have built. Mm. And this is the car in the modern era that James Bond should be driving to keep those British lines.
Yeah.
This is what they should have done. And you know, and I know David Brown went and built the Speedback and stuff like that, but that's on a Jag. Do you know what I mean? Mm. That's based on a Jag with his body on it, and that's an awful lot of money. But this is underneath that shell. That's carbon. That's the best. That's carbon fiber. It's all machined, billeted wheels, and as I say, windows and everything going in it. It's all Aston brakes, Aston chassis, V12, SIP 5.9 liter. That's a 200. You all know this, JP. That's 185 mile per hour car
all day long.
That's what that is. And what we're going to do as well, if the right person wants us to do it, we will do all the bespoke luggage. We'll do all that sort of business with it. We've had interest from the United States and the Middle East. But it's nowhere near as expensive. I mean, for instance, the Evolution DB, I think they're calling it the DB12, which is the DB5 Evolution with the brand new one they've made out of aluminium and stuff.
Yeah.
It's 2.8 million.
Yeah. This is what, 250, 275, something
like
that?
Yeah, our car is under a tenth of that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's like, and you are driving an Aston Martin.
So here's a question for you, Bradley. Is that what's the relationship like with someone like Aston Martin on a project like this? Because on one hand, it's a huge compliment in so much as you're using their footprint and many of their key component parts to build this car. But on the other hand... One might suggest that you're saying that this is a car that they should have built but haven't built, and you're jumping in the middle. Do you see what I mean? Could it potentially be an awkward situation?
I guess it could. No one's come to us thus far, Dave. We've showed it at Goodwood, Revival Festival Speed. We showed it at Silverstone, and we showed it, and we were sitting next to the Aston tent.
Yeah.
And a guy from Aston come over, and he said, "Crikey." He said, "That is absolutely beautiful."
Oh, yeah.
He said, "My God." He said, and he didn't say it to me. He said it to one of my guys. He said, "That's the car we should have built."
Really?
And what I would love, now I might be mistaken, and I don't want to talk out of turn, but I might be mistaken. I don't know who owns Aston now, because it's quite an anomaly. Is it the Canadian dude?
It is, yeah. Yeah, Lawrence Stroll.
Right. Now, what I'd love for him to do, I'd just love for him to see it and come and instead of saying, I'd love to say, he'd say, "Brad, why don't you let us have that design?
Yeah.
Let us have that design and we'll build them."
Yeah.
I'd love him to do that. I'd, I, and, because then I could, I've done my job.
Yeah.
As an engineer, Dave, because I'm telling you now, all my tutors in that technical school I was at said I'd never make an engineer as long as I lived.
But the thing is, you've got the first part of the ultimate compliment in this whole procedure, haven't you? In as much as, on one level, somebody from Aston Martin says, Brad, you know what? That's the car we should have built, right? Yeah. You're thinking, it doesn't get any better than that. But as you say, for the gaffer of Aston Martin to kind of go, can we put that into production? You're like, job done.
That will
job
be me. Done.
Oh, I would, that would be an unbelievable dream. That would be it. No matter, the two great things I've done in my life was get married, have my children, work with my son on stage when he was eight, then work with my son doing it, and I guess doing something like this, because this, I started out as an engineer.
Yeah, I know, it's great.
Brad, you mentioned James Bond before. There's a funny story, is it not, about the car and your sister and when she first saw it on the telly.
Oh, so this was last week, right? So Holly and Phil, it was on this morning, and they said, can we have it on the show back, because you're doing James Bond week? And I said, sure. And said, will you announce the fact that you've built this car, etc., etc.? So I said, yeah. So my sister Kerry works in Watford, right, at B&Q. But she was sitting at home in her kitchen. So she's watching the show. And, you know, they've announced that it's Daniel Craig's last outing as James Bond. Who's going to fill the seats to do as James Bond? And my sister's not really listening. She's sort of in the kitchen, telly's on. She's not really listening. And she's having her tea, and all of a sudden, here is Bradley Walsh's car. It's the new James Bond.
No way.
Bradley Walsh's James Bond car. So my sister shouts out to her and my nephews, oh my God, oh my God, Brad's going to be James Bond. Brad's the new James Bond. And she's spitting her tea, and she's screaming. They're going, Mum, what's up? She goes, Brad's going to be the new James Bond. And so she rings me, she said, I can't believe it. And I went, Kerry,
behave.
I'm not going to be in the new James Bond. I said, come on, pull yourself together. She said, they said on the telly you were. I said, no, they didn't.
Yeah, she said, lovely is that?
My nephew said, they were screaming. Yeah, so it's brilliant. It's brilliant. So it's funny stuff.
I can see a similarity in the look, though, to be fair, Brad.
What, between me and my sister?
Yes. Yeah, she wears them tight blue shorts well. She really does.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, you've got your men. You know, come on, James Bond. Who's been your favourite Bond? Seriously,
for me, it's Roger Moore. But I think that's
really.
I think, Brad, that's more to do with he was my era. You know, I'm 47 years old now, right? So that was very much those James Bond films in the 80s. He was James Bond. So yeah. I think to a certain extent, you have to go for the one. See, for me, Timothy Dalton, no. Sean Connery was before my time. So I think, you know, you have to go for who was your one.
Yeah, I sort of see that. What about you, JP?
Do you know what? I'd say the same, actually. Although I'm a big fan of Sean Connery, I thought he just had a certain edge which Roger didn't.
Right.
But yeah, I'm not a fan of the Dalton and all those guys. But do you know what?
I don't think they were given a big enough chance, a long enough run.
Probably.
So it was very difficult for them to be fair.
And yours, Brad, who was your fave?
Well, obviously, I'm a 60s child, so Sean Connery was brilliant. Yeah. I'm 61 now, actually. So Sean Connery for me was fantastic. But I've got to say, you've got to go a long way to beat Daniel Craig.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
I think not only has he got the look, he's got the style, he's got the panache, he's got the, he's rough around the edges, you know, he's, for me, he's, you got to go some to beat
him. He's good, isn't he?
Who is next?
Well, let's ask your sister, shall we, because she's got...
What's the word in B&Q in what?
Yeah. Oh, can you imagine, though, if she'd not spoken to you for a few days, couldn't get hold of you, and she's told everyone at B&Q, can you imagine that? Can you imagine? That'd be excellent.
I tell you what, I know he's been mentioned before, in fact, multiple times, and there's been bookies putting odds against him. I think that Idris Elba's a good shout, you know?
Me too.
I think he's a good
me
shout.
Me too.
I think he's a good shout.
I thought he was brilliant in Luther.
Yep.
I thought that character in Luther is pretty close to where you need to be.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Idris, and he's handsome, he's everything you need a James Bond to be, he's sexy, he's
Brilliant. I couldn't agree more.
Tom Hardy, he could do it, couldn't he? Tom Hardy.
Yeah, he could. I think there's a few of them, especially new young actors as well. But I think, how old is Idris now? Do you think he's... What is Idris? He's got to be...
Late 40s.
Late 40s, I reckon.
Is he? Yeah, is he? I wouldn't have thought he was as old as that. Wow. But just goes to show you, you know, it's how we're talking about it now. And don't forget, this franchise is as old as me. So this is a 60-year-old film franchise.
Amazing, isn't it?
Still going strong. Yeah. It's going to break all box office records. What a stroke of genius from the Barbara Broccoli and thing. To hold it over and not release it on Netflix and all that. Yeah. What a stroke of genius.
Yeah, I know. But and ballsy as well.
The anticipation. Have you seen it yet?
No, not yet.
No, neither have I, because my wife's just gone away to do a bit of work, and I wanted to go and see it with my wife and my son, and we all want to go and have a proper night out like we used to do at this pictures. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have a proper night out, yeah. and I'm going to pull up in that Vantara. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, that'd be nice. Straight to the front doors. So, Brad, you know, talking about the 60s, going back to the Bond stuff. Tell me, what was your first moment when cars became a thing for you? You know, what was your first love?
Okay, I think that when I was a kid, for Christmas and stuff, my mum and dad's first car, my Uncle Michael, my Uncle John, we all call him Louis Walsh, not the Louis Walsh, but Lou Walsh, he had a Ford Cortina 1600E. And, you know, we had a navy blue Mark I Cortina. My mum had a Ford Popular sit up and beg with suicide doors. those sort of cars, my dad had two Breaker Zephyrs in our garden at the top by our garage. And very unusual to have a garage with a council house back then.
Yeah.
And I lived in a street called Gander's Ash in Leavesden at number 9. And it had like a platform at the back, concrete platform, that you drove in through some separate garages. And my dad had two Zephyrs, Ford Zephyrs, up there. And we used to play in the Zephyrs. They were our playground.
Brilliant.
So we used to pretend to drive them and stuff like that and lift the bonnet up and all that sort of business. So that's where the sort of love for vehicles came from. I remember my mum once driving us down the Watford bypass, A41, going down towards Bushy.
Mm.
And the bonnet of the Ford Popular, sit up and beg, flew open. And my mum had only been driving, I'd say, a couple of months.
Oh, my God.
It just, but took control brilliantly, immediately slowed down, pulled in. You know, in those days, there was no cars behind you. You wouldn't see another car for a month. You know, it was all good.
Yeah.
And I remember these things vividly, and just great, great, great days of those sort of vehicles. And when you stepped into a car back in the day, in the 60s, everything smelled of leather.
Yes.
You know, bench seats.
Yeah.
I remember one of my uncles had a Ford Zephyr. It was like sitting inside a jumbo jet. Mm. It was amazing. and consequently, I then... just fell in love with cars. And I could, this is true, and you'll think I'm making this up. So when I used to lie in bed at number 9, Gander's Ash, I could tell when my dad or my mum was came into the street in the car.
Yeah.
From the exhaust note.
I could tell the sound of the engine, the exhaust, the lot. Yeah. I knew what car it was.
Yeah.
I knew it. And that was... just a fantastic thing. And my Uncle John was very... my mum's... John O'Connell, my dad, who was a tanker driver, my mum's brother, was brilliant.
We need him working now,
cars.
Actually. He's got his licence.
Yeah, no, bless him. He's driving that tanker in the sky now.
Oh.
And he was brilliant at tinkering with cars. And so that was just an early love of vehicles. I don't know why, but my mum... and dad, for Christmas, because I've loved it, used to buy me corgi toys.
Yeah.
And I had a corgi, a C1, a 1961 or 62 C1 Vet, you know, a Lincoln Continental.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I loved American cars, that whole sort of ethos of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I've now got a 1960 red and white C1 drophead Vet.
Oh, have you? Fantastic.
And, and that's, I've got one of those. It's one of my dream cars. And I wanted a gold, this is going to sound mad, I wanted a gold, as long as a football pitch, Lincoln Continental. Don't ask me why. I just wanted it. And with a white Everflex roof and a... So the love of it, the love of all that stuff, yeah. cars in... Yeah. in And then, of course, you get your first car.
Yeah, which... What was it? Yeah. What was it?
My first car... What do you reckon my first car was? I was working at Rolls-Royce. I was an apprentice. I was working at Rolls-Royce. I was on £20 a week. What do you reckon? What do you reckon my first car was? Back in the day. 1970. I passed my test in 77... November 77, first car I bought within 3 or 4 months.
I'm going to go for a Mini.
That's what I was going to say. But then I think that's too obvious. So I'm going to say something like a Morris Marina.
No, Mini. Was it? A Mini 1000, yeah. And I stuck a 3-inch exhaust on it.
3-1, nice.
A 3-inch exhaust on it. So it sounded, I put a Cooper S badge on it. I thought I was Paddy Hubcap.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I was, it was just magic. Okay. I bought it off my mate Derek Heath, yeah. And I bought it. I'm telling you how much I bought it for, lads. £275.
Wow. Which was a few quid back then.
It was a G plate. It was a G plate. So it was on a 60. What's that? 69. Something like that. 70. Something like that. So I bought it anyway. And I had to borrow the money off my nan and granddad, my Scottish grandparents, Marion and Barney, who my son Barney's named mm-hmm. after. And but what it was, little did I know then, what a wonderful thing borrowing money for my grandparents was. And every grandchild should do it. And I tell you for why. Because my grandfather, Barney, who was a great bloke from Glasgow, made me come back every week and pay them £5 every week back. Yeah, he said, you can borrow it as long as you pay £5 every Friday from your wages yep. back. So what I did, I visited my grandparents every week yeah. until that car was paid up
yeah, lovely.
On a Friday and had ham, egg and chips that my nan made me.
Wow.
That's and, great.
And yeah, and we both kept, I kept a little book for my granddad. He said, this is how you look after it. He said, you keep a little book, make sure you're all paid. He said, I'll sign it for you like you've gone down the bank.
What a great idea. What a brilliant idea.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened.
I might try and do that with my kids, because otherwise I don't sit seeing with the dreadful internet thing. Come down and give me down a fiver.
Exactly.
Can
right.
Can I sign your book? Give us that fiver.
Listen, this is true. Right? So I used to take my mates out in my car, and where I lived in a place called Leavesden, in Watford. Mm-hmm. My mum used to work at Leavesden Hospital. There was up College Rise. There was in sort of on the edge of Leavesden and Abbots Langley. Mm-hmm. There was two hospitals. One on the right called Abbots Langley Hospital, and one on the left, one on the right called Leavesden Hospital, one on the right called Abbots Langley Hospital. And what we did, and there was underneath it, there was a subway underneath to walk and wheel trolleys and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you could get a car down there. And I used to drive down really late at night, sneak onto the grounds and drive it and do that like you did in the Italian job. and do that, excellent. Turn it around and bring it back. And then, wow.
I tell you what, do you reckon that tunnel's still there? Because if it is, we've got to go and remake that moment.
Do you know what? I don't know. I bet they filled it in because it's now all housing estates, sadly. Yeah, it's all housing estates, but happy memories. And then having done all that and being able to do handbrake turns and be able to do all that business and fantastic and slip the clutch and all that old game, sensational. I then reversed. I said to my mate Mark Goodman, who we call Mud. I said, Mud, who's still my mate now. I said, Mud, watch this. I'm going to hard right it, reverse as quick as I can, spin it and drive off. Misjudged it, caught a lamppost and pinged my near side front light out like a orange pit, right into the street. And he went over, he got out of the car, he went over, picked it up, and he looked at me and he went, you give it to him. Happy birthday. I remember it like it was yesterday. Happy birthday, he said.
What follows that then, Brad? What follows a Mini in your car evolution? Oh,
crikey. I then went through a whole gamut of cars. I bought myself a Mark 1 Escort, that was yellow. I put a black stripe down it to make it look like a Mexico. And I used to have to park it on a slant because the battery was always flat and it was freezing cold. And I had to jump start it in the morning. And oh, my God. And then a Hillman Hunter. Oh, my God. And then I went to Pontins to become a blue coat. And my mate asked me if I wanted to buy a Vauxhall. I went, absolutely. I know JP used to drive Vauxhalls, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I said, no, not for me. I don't fancy a Vauxhall at all. No, I'm a Ford man. I'm a Ford man or Mini. I want Austin. You know what I mean? Don't fancy a Vauxhall. And he said, you've got to have a look at this car, man. And it was a Vauxhall VX490. Which is an old Victor, but a big one.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely stonking. What a motor that was. That would go through a nuclear war. That was just fantastic. In fact, I drove from Watford to Morecambe, where I was going to be a blue coat, with it, and the exhaust was hanging off. And I drove, I didn't realise, I wondered what the noise was, but the exhaust was hanging off for a good 80 miles and was still in the same position when I got up there. Sparks were flying out the back. I didn't set myself on fire. And one of the guys happened to be a mechanic, another blue coat up there, a welder, and put it back together for me. Yeah. Yeah. Happy days.
Do you know, it's funny what you say about the... Because I've always felt this. There's a sort of... almost a bit like a tribal thing. It's almost a bit like football, whereby you were either this or you were that. And the fact that you mentioned Ford, because my dad was a Ford man, right? And funnily enough, he was also a Mini man. My dad, who would now be, God, if he was still around, he'd now be 83, and he went through a whole succession of Minis that he owned in the 60s. But with him, he bought Cortinas. With me, I had his Cortina, I had a Fiesta, I had a Capri. And the basic reason the reason behind all of this is that my dad liked Fords because he could fix them. Right.
Yes. Now,
my dad was an engineer by trade, but he wasn't a mechanic by any stretch. But, you know, in the days when people were engineers and they understood how things worked, and he bought those cars for the simple reason. The reason why he bought me a Fiesta and not a Micra was because he knew he could fix the Fiesta.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. We had a welder at Rolls Royce, and when you were an apprentice on the floor and you're going through your training, you still become under an apprentice, although you was at the technical school.
Yeah.
You still had that apprenticeship tag, and then you were assigned to a different unit or a different department. And I was working under a welder called Nobby Clark, Buster Clark, and he was great at fixing cars. He was great at welding cars. And he had a Mark I Lotus Cortina.
Oh,
lovely. Oh, man. The white with the green. Yeah. Man.
Thing, yeah.
Oh, proper car. Now they're like 50, 60 grand.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Oh,
I mean,
no. Oh, 150,
bigger,
150 big, grand.
Bigger. Yeah, well, there you are.
They're bonkers.
I left Rolls Royce. Went to become a blue coat, come back from being a blue coat, and then had to get a proper job again, and went to work for a company called Turbine Services. They used to fix all the exhaust manifolds for Cathay Pacific up in Hatfield.
Oh, yeah.
And I became a dad then, and I had to get myself, I had to become a responsible human being and get myself a Vauxhall Cavalier.
Sorry, just to pause you, Brett. So this is way before show business.
This is 81. Well, I'd play. Don't forget, I was playing football as well. By the way,
Brentford,
I was at Brentford.
Yeah.
I was at Brentford. So you know, but I was getting picked up to go to the. I never have to drive to the football. I was getting picked up to go and play. But I went back. I'd finished playing football. I'd missed the football out in this conversation. This is all about the engineering.
Yeah.
And I got back into the factory and I bought myself a yellow Vauxhall Cavalier. Well, I don't know why yellow it is, because maybe I'm colourblind. I like bright colours. SMU28S. SMU28S.
Yeah, 77-ish?
78 S plate.
Yeah.
And then what I did was I sold that and then bought another Vauxhall Cavalier, a newer version, B997YNK. Yeah.
And isn't it hilarious that we remember these registrations? Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
All
amazing.
The things we've got in our head. And
amazing.
We can recall that.
Do you know what I did the other day? Just I was in between stuff and I was a bit like, I get lost on the internet. And I basically went onto the Gov MOT site and I put in the reg of every car I've ever owned, every car that my dad had ever owned, just to see on the off chance that whether they were still around and whether they were
still.
And
are they?
Are they, Dave?
No, none of them. None of them were, unfortunately. But right. I was just thinking, maybe someone might have taken that Cortina that I bloody sold to my mate for 600 quid, and they might have done it up, and it might be back on the road. But it's not.
Wouldn't that be great? A great legacy.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's funny because, and this is me. This is me now. Buster Clark said to me, the guy that he's no longer with us, sadly, Buster, and. He said to me, when you make it in showbiz, because I used to enter all the talent shows as well when I was in the factory. He said, when you make it in showbiz and become famous, can I fix your Rolls Royce? And I said, of course you can. And those days when we worked for Rolls Royce, we were quite privileged because we would get, because we was a Rolls Royce employee on £120 a week, we could get 25% off the purchase price of a Rolls Royce. So, so yeah, I know. That was our JP. That was our perk. Thanks. That was our perk. So anyway, about I don't know. Let's say about 2003, 2004, something like that. Maybe longer.
Yeah.
That early ago, I bought a Mulsanne, a Bentley. And it was blue. And this is now my wife Donna. She's from Canning Town in East London, right? We were living in Chigwell in Essex, and I bought it. And it's a beautiful colour, Moroccan blue. It was called. It had white sheepskin tattered things and the leather. Oh, it was a sensational car, sensational. And I bought it, and I pulled up, and I said to Donna, "What do you reckon on that?" And she went, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, look." I said, "Look at that, love. Come and have a look at this. Look." She went, "I'm not getting in that." And I went, "What do you mean you're not getting in that? It's a Bentley." She went, "No, no, I know what it is, but I'm not getting in that. You can't drive around Epping in that." And I said, "Of course you can." I said, "It'll be fine." She said, "I'm telling you now, I am not getting in that. You'll make a show of me." And I went, "Really?" She went, "Yeah." So I said, "Oh, all right. Well, we'll take it out of a special on Sunday." I open my garage door, I back it into the garage, it's 4 inches too long.
No.
4 inches too long. Honestly, 4 inches too long. It was about, I could just about squeeze it in key and just shut the thing, but I had to have a cloth on the front. How long did I keep it? I drove it through Thade and Boyce and I drove it round. How long did I keep it?
A couple of weeks.
Exactly. 2 weeks.
Was it? No way.
2 weeks. 2 weeks. I said to Donna, "You're absolutely right. It's not us, love, is it?"
Yeah.
"You're absolutely right." And I sold it to my mate who sells prestige cars. And I sold it to my pal. And I see guys driving Phantoms. I mean, the Rolls Royce is the car to have. Everyone wants a car, whether you're a gangster, the Pope, Adolf Hitler, Idi Amin. Everyone wanted a Rolls Royce. Yeah. The footballers, right? And I see guys driving Phantoms that own Phantoms. Now, if you own a Phantom, what the heck are you doing driving it? It looks ludicrous.
You've got to be in the back, haven't you?
You've got to be in the back. So
that's where all dictators sit.
Yeah. So despots. So I said, you can't be having one of those and driving it as well. It just don't look right. It's a bit too showy. And that's not me. That's really not me. So I'd rather, I drive my car. My son's got a little GLA Merc, 200 Merc, 1600 cc. I nip around in that. It's quite cool. Do you know what I mean? And in Portugal, where I stay, I've got a Vespa scooter.
Love those.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what? Well, that answers my, which is going to be my last question, your biggest motor mistake. It's got to be the Mulsanne then, hasn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, JP, don't get me wrong, a beautiful car.
Yeah. Stunning.
And the engineering is second to none. Seriously, Rolls-Royce, whether it's jet engines, whatever it is, I mean, it's just, they're extraordinary. And funny enough, that's where my entrance to showbiz came from Rolls-Royce as well. Because I entered their talent competition, came second, I got a week at a nightclub in Watford called Bailey's, and that's where my agent and manager saw me and took me on.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it all links back to motoring.
It all comes back to Watford, Leavesden, it's all in the same place, cars at the centre of the whole thing. I love it. I love it. Brad, we're sadly running out of time, unfortunately. But before you go, you've given us the gift of the story of the Vantare and the car. We have
to give
something back, right? Now, listen, this is an exclusive, a showbiz exclusive for you, right?
Go ahead.
I've got ITV4 plus one plus Challenge in Belgium fighting me for the rights of this. It's a new telly format. It's called The Car Chase, right?
I love it.
It's an automotive-themed quiz show. I think it'd be nice around tea time. I wonder, can we do a quick pilot? Very quick pilot.
Let's do that.
Okay, right. So, Brad, I'm going to put you on the other side of things for once.
Go.
You're going to be the contestant. You're going to be up against the car chaser, Jason Plato, otherwise known as Dick Dastardly.
Oh, Dick Dastardly. Yes.
Dick Dastardly. Dick Dastardly.
Okay.
I love it.
So it's really simple. It's not in any way like any program that you may have presented before. Okay? It's called The Car Chase.
How's it work, Dave? How's it work?
Let me tell you, Jason. Let me tell you. You're each going to have 30 seconds on the clock, right, to answer as many questions as you can. Bradley, you're going to go first, and then let's see if the car chaser can chase you. Brad,
oh,
are you ready?
Okay, go.
We've even got sirens in the background to set the atmosphere. Right, here we go. Brad, your time starts now. Which car manufacturer makes the Vantage, the DBS and the DB11?
Aston Martin.
Who was the first ever host of Blankety Blank?
Terry Wogan.
Until last year, which London football club played its home matches at Griffin Park?
Brentford.
Which Christian name links Pitt, Friedel and Wiggins?
Brad.
Name three of the chasers.
The Dark Destroyer, the Beast and the Governess.
The 1981 hit What Kind of Fool is a duet between which two recording artists? I'll start it so I'll finish. What Kind of Fool?
What Kind of Fool? What year?
1981. I'll give you a clue, Brad. It featured on your first album.
It did. Would it have been Sammy Davis Jr. and someone?
Barbara Streisand and Barry Gibb I've got here.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Okay, so listen, Brad, do you know what? I'm going to give you that. I'm going to give you six for that, Brad, in your 30 seconds.
Really?
It's a decent start. Right, now listen. So can Dick Dastardly, our car chaser, can he do better?
Honestly,
this will be great in the edit. They will love this in Belgium. Right.
Go on, Dick.
Dick Dastardly, your time starts now. The British Grand Prix is held every year at which iconic circuit?
Silverstone.
Which famous French car maker produced a Laguna between 94 and 2012?
Renault.
Name a famous Greek philosopher.
Plato.
Red Bull team principal Christian Horner is married to which former Spice Girl?
The ginger one with freckles Spice.
What's a primary ingredient in the shepherd's pie?
Shepherd's pie is the shepherdess. It's the lamb.
Which means, I can tell you, at the end of that, Dick Dastardly didn't quite do it. The winner is Bradley Walsh.
Oh, that was brilliant. I love it. I love it. Name a Greek philosopher.
Do you know what? And if he'd
said
Aristotle, if he said that, I'd have said, name another one beginning with P, you plonker.
Oh, that was absolutely brilliant. That was brilliant. Brilliant.
Jason, I think you need to take us out, mate.
But do you know what? We could go on all day because this is ace. But that's about it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Thanks, Dave, as always. And a huge thanks to our special guest this week, the one and only Mr. Bradley Walsh. Thanks,
Super.
Mate.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thanks, Jay. Cheers, Dave.
Thank you very much indeed. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening and we'll catch you next week. Ta-da.
God bless.